Welcome to Hard Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Guys, welcome to Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Janine. I'm joined here by my co-host, Mimi Steven. Haunt Heads basically is a podcast about all that weird and wonderful stuff that, you know, maybe when you tell it to other people, they look at you a little funny and they say, you know, why do you like that? What? That's so weird. That freaks me out. You know, don't talk about that. And I think a big part of creating this podcast is to kind of remove that stigma of, you know, this is weird, don't talk to me about that. I know for myself, you know, I greatly enjoy the paranormal and the freaky and the weird and the odd. And I think I've always been like that. I don't know what your experience is, Mimi.
Would you say that you're a believer or on the cusp?
I think I am a believer. But I think that there are also certain instances that make me a skeptic.
Okay.
I think it's important to be skeptical about things that are happening in the world, and not just be a blind, you know, follower of whatever information you hear.
Right.
And I think a lot of the stuff that we're going to discuss on this podcast too is going to come down to, well, is it fact or fiction? Did it actually happen? The way that they say it happened, maybe it did happen, but maybe there wasn't that one, you know, push that really sent it over the edge. Maybe we needed that to cement that story in history. I think that's a big part of it too. But I've done stories in the past. I worked for a small newspaper and I did stories about people going out to cemeteries and sitting down and recording EVPs and, you know, talking to spirits and seeing orbs. And I think that that's really, as far as orbs are concerned, I think that's kind of where I draw the line, simply because orbs could be something on the lens of the camera, they could be dust, they could be, I mean, I've seen some orbs that are really, like, you see that and you're like, yeah, that's something, you know, you'll see like a little face in it or something, you know, and that kind of pulls you in and makes you look closer. But for the most part, I think they can be explained away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a lot of ghost hunting shows out there that just kind of say, okay, you know, that's an orb.
Right.
and we're done.
Right. I think I feel along the same lines as you do. I'm not a believer. And who am I to judge if it's real or not? But
sure.
I find it fascinating. You know, just, I want to know more, I want to experience more.
Right.
And we've, as a family, we've always been interested in haunted stories and spiritual stories. And I'm not so much, I don't like that spirit information always becomes so negative.
Mm.
Because I like to think that someone who's passed on but still has unfinished business isn't necessarily mean to those around.
Sure.
In their space.
Right.
So I'd like to get rid of the negative aspect and envision more of the interesting aspect.
Right, yeah.
You know, I don't want people to think so negatively about things that might happen unexpectedly or unexplainably. I don't know, but I've always, since little kid, I've always been interested in different things.
Yeah.
I think I've had a few experiences in my life that have been different, and I think in some ways I pick up on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I'm just fascinated by the whole aspect.
Yeah, and well, for me, you know, it started very young for me. I think I was 7 or 8 years old, and I actually wrote about this on the blog a little bit, so if you guys are interested in checking that out, that is on the Haunt Heads blog. There are a couple of posts on there. There's one about the flatbed truck ghost that I experienced, and there's also another one there about you know, my living with my grandparents and experiencing something. So I think I was 7 or 8, and I remember I was sick. I wasn't feeling really well, and a lot of people say, well, you weren't feeling well, so maybe it was something that you hallucinated because you were on, like, cough syrup with codeine, or, you know, whatever. I mean, way back when, we had the good cough syrup. So, it really could have been, you know, anything, is what they say. And, for me, I mean, it was really kind of a larger-than-life experience. So I woke up in the middle of the night. I was sweating and just, like, really sick. And I had to go to the bathroom to be physically sick. And then when I was done, I was walking back to my bedroom, which was at the end of a long hall. So when you walked in through the door, there was a set of stairs that led up and a set of stairs that led down into the basement area. So I was walking back to my room, and I looked down the hall, and I saw kind of, like, strange lights up at the top of the stairs. And I said, well, I don't think that I left anything on downstairs. Like, maybe my grandfather was downstairs and was watching TV or something. You know, I mean, explain it away. Because you've got to be able to make sense of it somehow. So I'm going through this in my mind. And then eventually I'm like, well, you know, if you did leave the TV on, I should probably go down and turn off the TV. So, you know, I pad down the hall, and I walk past my grandparents' room, and they're both asleep. And it was just myself and them in the house at the time. I get to the top of the stairs, and I hear, like, murmuring, which can be explained by a TV left on. And there's still, like, weird lights flickering on the ceiling, which can be explained by a TV left on. So I started walking down the stairs. And I got about halfway down the stairs when I realized that the murmuring sound was people talking. Like, actual people in the room talking. Which, I think it was, like, 3 in the morning. Like, 2 or 3 in the morning. So who's downstairs talking? So I got to a point on the stairs where I stopped. And they had, the house was built in the 70s, so it had cutouts in the stairwell. So you could look through and see the basement. So I look through, and I don't really see anything. And then I walk down a couple of more stairs, and there are people standing there in period dress, almost Victorian, with, like, the high collars, and, like, the men are wearing the tall hats, and they're wearing, like, the little spats over their shoes, and, like, they're very ornate. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm watching them, and there's more than one pair of them. There's, like, 3 or 4 pairs of them. And they're dancing. I can hear the sound of their skirts rustling on the floor.
Oh, wow.
Like, I can hear the rustling of their jackets. You know, it's all very, very sharp and very real, which led me to believe that it was not something I was dreaming, because it's right there. You know, I'm seeing it. So I think at some point I must have gasped or made some sort of a sound. And they turned and they looked at me. And all at once, they stopped and they turned and they looked at me. And when I looked at their faces were, like, blurred. And I realized that the bottoms, like, by their feet were blurred. It was almost as if they were, you know how you have a TV station that doesn't quite come in?
Right.
And you see little bits and pieces, but there's pieces missing. It was like that.
Oh.
And so I got so scared, I got so freaked out, that I turned and I just bolted back up the stairs. So I'm, you know, grabbing onto the stairs, you know, and, like, stuffing my knees on the stairs, which, you know, they had carpeting, and I was wearing, you know, like, pajama shorts or whatever. And so I got back to bed, and I was so petrified that I just pulled the blankets up over my head. And at some point, I must have fallen asleep. So I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, no, that was a dream. Like, there's no possible way that that happened.
And it's 7 or 8.
But
how
it's 7.
How could you have those kind of details?
Yeah, right.
Victorian kind of details.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think a lot of it is looking back now and saying, yeah, that was, because I still remember it very clearly. You know, I'm getting up out of bed, and I'm getting ready for the day, whatever, and I asked my grandmother to turn on the tap in the bathroom. when you turned on the taps, the pipes would shutter if you didn't get them just right. So she went in and she turned on the taps for me, and I went in and I jumped in the bathtub. And when my knees hit the water, it was like the shock of pain, and I looked at my knees and I had carpet burns all the way from the top of my knee, like down halfway down my shin. And so then I knew that that was not something that I dreamed. Like, you know, I didn't dream that. That was something that I actually experienced. If you guys want to read about that, that's on the Hauntheads blog. It's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been something that I have carried with me my entire life. And even now, there are some nights where I'll wake up and think I hear murmuring, you know, or people talking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, is this a dream?
How long has your family lived in that house?
Let's see. They bought the house, I believe, in, I think it was 1986 or 87.
Okay.
And then they lived there until, I think, 2000. And then they moved into a new house.
Do you know when the house was built?
It was built in, like, the 70s.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out if there was maybe something there before that was, you know, raised to build that structure.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's got to be some explanation for it. There's just,
yeah.
You know,
that'll
it's just crazy.
To start researching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ooh, we can work on that.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So I don't know if you've had any paranormal experiences or...
Well, I had a couple. I was 2 years old and in my crib, and it was very dark in my room. And my Aunt Sylvia came in to get me, but she said I was babbling, like I was talking to somebody.
Oh.
So, I don't know, but I was standing up and talking to somebody, and then she came and got me. So, I don't know. Maybe it was just that kid thing. I don't know. But I had a recurring... We lived in an area where our little subdivision cut off, and then there was a big woods, and then it's right next to the Milwaukee River. And I used to have, from the time I was about 4 to maybe 10 or 12, I had a recurring dream that I was running into the woods, and there was a man with a white cowboy suit and a cowboy hat. And in the woods, there was this little red house, but it was more like a bar, like an old-time bar.
Okay.
And he was in there, and people were in there, like cowboys and Indians type people.
Okay.
And I know that in the area, there's some Indian burial grounds, you know, so it's just a reoccurring dream where I was always going into there and talking to the man in the white suit.
Right.
So there's, you know, maybe I'm dreaming of something that was actually there at one time, because it was along the trail of where people would come through to go to, Hamilton, which had a little, it's along the Milwaukee River, and it's kind of near Cedarburg.
Okay.
And it's a little town called Hamilton, but there was a trade tracks that used to go around there, and it was a stop for the trains, and they would go off there. But we didn't live there, but we followed the river. So I always thought that, you know, maybe I was in connection with someone from way a long time ago. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that's sweet. And then we went to Salem, Massachusetts sometime.
Oh, you did. I want to go to Salem so bad.
Oh, we should go together.
We should go together.
I was only there
road
for
trip.
2 days. Yes.
Road trip.
It was so beautiful and wonderful and just very spiritual in a way. But my kids were standing under a tree where the hangings took place at the memorial was for the Salem witch hunts and the tree, whatever. And there was a little boy, a story from many years ago, where a little boy fell out of a tree and died.
Mm.
And as she was telling us the story, a branch fell and hit my kids.
Oh.
And it was just really neat. You know, and like I said, I'm a believer, but I'm not an unbeliever. you know, I don't doubt things. I don't know. Just interesting. Sorry, I'm very negative.
No, it's okay. I think the really cool thing about kind of being on the fence about it is that you're open to more things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're more open to the weird and the wonderful and the strange than you would be if you were a complete skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I think it's fine to be a complete skeptic too. I think that when things happen that you can't explain and you're a complete skeptic, that maybe that would shake you a little bit more. But yeah, I think it's cool to kind of be just kind of, you know, impartial and, you know, just kind of feel out situations and, you know, this might be haunted, but maybe it's not, but let me research it.
Right.
A lot of the blog posts that I've been doing for Haunt Heads, I've been going back and trying to figure out if it's fact or fiction or how much of it is fact or fiction. For example, you know, with the post that I did about the Goat Man, I had a friend who said that her mother had told her about the Goat Man, and her mother's mother, her grandmother, had told her about the Goat Man. And it was a story that was passed on through generations. Well, is that a true story? No, probably not. Why would somebody create a story like that? Well, the Goat Man is said to live in a dilapidated house in the woods. Where maybe don't you want your kids to go? A dilapidated house in the woods. So maybe it was just, you know what, Susie, Johnny, stay out of the woods, because there's a Goat Man in there that plays little children and hangs them from trees. I don't know why your mother would tell you that he did that, but maybe your siblings told you that. You know, maybe you got that from your older brother or your older sister or whatever, you know, and it's that kind of storytelling that turns into kind of a cautionary tale more so than something that's rooted in fact.
Right, but then you also wonder, is there so many tales that you hear?
Mm.
You just feel like there has to be some sort of truth to it.
Yeah.
Something at some time happened, and then it's you know, whenever you pass something down, it changes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's always a bit of truth at the end, and I really believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that there's something out there.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe there was a creepy guy that lived in a dilapidated shack in the woods at some point, and they were like, he looks really weird. And then when somebody played the telephone game, you know, the telephone game, somebody tells you something, and then you tell it to somebody else, and it changes just slightly, just enough, it's tweaked.
Right.
And then it gets to the end, and it's not the same thing at all.
Right.
I mean, it could be, it could completely be one of those situations.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just doctored just enough so that Sally and Johnny stay out of the woods.
Right.
But yeah, so a lot of that stuff, you know, we're going to discuss on the podcast. It's just going to be really relaxed. We're just going to kind of sit here and talk to you guys. You know, it seems like that's the trend of podcasts nowadays. You just sit here and you swear like a motherfucker and you talk about whatever you want to do. And I just made this podcast explicit. So if you don't like swearing, probably turn it off right now. So it has been decided unanimously between the two of us that I would go first.
Yes.
So, and it's likely only because it's the first podcast and maybe Mimi is a little nervous.
Yes,
but that's okay.
After all my rambling,
that is okay. So, when I was trying to think of a topic to do for the very first episode of Haunt Heads, I just kind of was like, you know, let's do something out of Wisconsin. Like, let's do something, you know, straight from home. And then maybe as the podcast, you know, kind of grows and we get more people, we'll start to do more obscure stuff. But, okay, so I decided that I was going to do the Summerwind Mansion because I love that story. And I also think that it's kind of, it borders on batshit crazy and hilariously funny. Because some of the things that they're saying that happened in this place, it's just, I just can't wrap my head around it. Not that it didn't happen, maybe it did happen, but I can't wrap my head around it.
It
depends on the situation. It really depends on the situation. And I feel like Summerwind, there have been so many documentaries and so many TV shows. And, you know, based on what happened in this house, it's just insane. There's so much, not only so much skepticism, but so much speculation about, you know, what was going on at this point in time. And then you kind of look at it and you think, well, the story that they're telling, is it authentic to this time and this place? Because there are certain instances where I was transported to, like, the Amityville Horror House,
mm-hmm.
and was like, that was horror, not whore house. Sorry, that came out as whore. It was not that. So, I mean, you know, instantly transported.
Right.
And so are they picking and choosing what they want to put in there? Was, you know, the Lutz family story released at that point in time? I don't know. But it just kind of, it kind of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way, and it seemed like sensationalism for sensationalism's sake. So that's kind of where I am on it. There are other stories that are, I mean, totally believable to me, and, you know, I'll be 100% on board with them.
Okay.
But this is just not, it's not going to be the, not going to be the one. Okay, Summerwind Mansion is located on the shores of West Bay Lake in the northeast region of Wisconsin. It was built in 1916 by Robert P. Lamont as a summer home. Many people claim that the paranormal activity didn't begin until after the Lamonts occupied Summerwind, but there are a lot of early accounts of Lamont's encounters with the paranormal. And I think the most famous was probably the spirit that he saw in the kitchen. I don't know if you know, Mimi, if you know anything about the Summerwind Mansion or, like, the history.
I've
yeah.
Well, I've also seen in the book.
About it. Oh, okay. Yeah. He supposedly sees a spirit in the kitchen, and he fires two shots at it. And so the proof that he saw the spirit in the kitchen is the fact that he shot at it twice, and there are holes in the door.
Which are still there, I think.
Well, not anymore.
Oh, they're
not? No, because that, well, that's, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. We're skipping ahead.
Sorry.
No, it's proof that he shot at a door.
Right.
You know, it's not proof that there was a spirit there. It's just physical proof that he shot at a door. Those bullet holes, the bullets were lodged in there, and the bullet holes remained for a long, long time. You know, they were there for a while. After the house was sold several times, after the Lamonts lived there, at this point, Arnold Hinshaw and his wife, Ginger, and their six children moved in the 1970s. Now, if I just said his wife, Ginger, and I just picture, like, this person in, like, rugger bell-bottom pants and, like, a halter top with, like, bright red hair piled on her head, maybe that's not what she looks like, but that's how I'm envisioning her. And as they're walking into the house with their bags, I'm, like, you know, doing 70s music, like, in my head. They are only there for 6 months. They only lasted 6 months, and apparently in that 6 months, it was a very eventful time for them, so it makes sense that they would only be there for 6 months. Almost immediately after they moved in, they reported activity, so like vague shapes and shadows in the hallways, mumbled voices in dark or empty rooms, and then when they'd go, you know, they'd take notice of these sounds, they would go and check it out, and there would be nothing there. You know, the room would just be empty, or the door would be closed. And the doors in that house were quite heavy, so I don't even know how you would hear a soft mumble through a door. The ghost of a woman was seen in the dining room, and she was seen floating past the French doors. The family, appropriately enough, just figured that this was all imagined, and they weren't actually seeing things. They weren't actually experiencing anything. They kind of go about their days, they go about their business, you know, they're living in the house, they're trying to redo things, they're trying to remodel, and they start to notice that things are breaking down. So, for example, the water heater or the water pump would stop working. They'd call a repair person to come and fix it. Well, when the repair person came, it would already have been repaired, and nobody could explain why that happened. So that was, yeah, that was something that I was like, that's ghost story. That's pretty good. Windows and doors that they closed would reopen on their own. As a matter of fact, there was one window that Arnold had to nail shut because it would keep opening. And it got to a point where, you know, in the middle of the night, it's open, and he's closed it 6 times. And so he's like, for fuck's sake, I'm just going to pop a nail in it. So that's what he did. He just nailed it shut. And as far as anybody knows, it stayed shut after that. Because, you know, let's see. So one day, Arnold went outside to get into his car to go to work, and it just burst into flames.
Wow.
They have no idea why.
Was he okay?
He was fine, but they never found a cause for it. They have no logical reason why. I mean, it could be chalked up to bad electrical or, you know,
like...
Did
he have any enemies?
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't even think of that. Now, if he had said, well, he was driving to work and, you know, his brakes gave out.
Right.
Inexplicably. Maybe then I'd be like, well, does he have any enemies? I don't know why I didn't think that when the car burst in the fucking flames. So... They want to make the best out of this bad situation. At this point, I don't know about you, but I would just be done. Like, I would be gone. I'd be like, peace out. Nice knowing you. House. Bye. You can have it back. Whatever you are. Because I can't sleep here. Like, there are random things exploding. And there are doors and windows opening and shutting. And there's weird things in the hall. And I just can't.
That doesn't sound like horrible to me. For some reason. It sounds like they want attention, or if
yeah,
there are spirits,
yeah.
Maybe
trying to draw, yeah, yeah.
To be ignored.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if he ever or the family ever tried to reach out to something that could happen.
You know, I don't think they ever did. I didn't see anything about it. So I'm going to go with no.
Okay.
So they say that they're going to make the best of a bad situation, and they hire some workers to improve the house. You know, they're going to redo the plaster, they're going to, you know, redo the staircase, blah, blah, blah. A few of the workers told the Hinshaws repeatedly that they were ill, and they just couldn't make it to work. And then the remainder of the workers just said that they weren't going to fucking work in the house.
They
told them explicitly that the house was haunted and that they wanted no part of it and that they were not coming to work.
But no details about
it. And no.
What
they and the other people were like, sick. Just didn't go to work. The root of this haunting is said to have started, you know, in full force when Arnold goes into a bedroom, and he starts pulling drawers out of the bedroom closet. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the old houses that have dressers built in, and they're usually covered with some heinous wallpaper to make it
right.
Look like there's nothing there.
Or layers and layers and layers
of lead paint. Don't chew on the walls, kids.
Nope.
Yeah. He goes in there, and he's, you know, he's pulling out the dresser drawers, and... So he opens one of the drawers, and he finds a dark space behind the wall. He's trying to figure out, you know, why, like, what is this? There's no back on the drawer. It's just open to this hole in the wall. He kind of wedges himself in there as best he can, and he can't really see anything, but when he reaches out with his hands, he touches something. And it feels, like, kind of weird and hairy. And so he pulls back, and he scuttles back across the floor, and he's horrified. And so he's like, well, if there's a dead animal in the wall, then we need to get it out. It can't just stay there. And this is the funny part. He waits until some of his kids come home. And he says to, I think she's like the second youngest or whatever, hey, Mary, can you come over here and crawl into this hole in the wall where I just felt something disgusting and see what it is? Okay. Mary, for some reason, she must have been like I was when I was a kid, like, afraid of nothing, is like, sure, Dad, no problem. So she...
Do you know how old Mary is?
I think she was the second oldest, so, I mean, still pretty young, like, not like, teenaged.
Okay.
So she wedges herself into the hole, and she's, like, back there, and she starts to scream. And then she starts to, like, claw her way out of the hole because, you know, no shit, Sherlock, there's something back there. You know, you just sent your kid back there. He kind of looks in there again with a flashlight, and she says that there's a person back there. And he looks in there with a flashlight, and he kind of catches, like, the edge of something. And so when they rip out that part of the wall and they go back there, they find a human skull with, like, some dirty black hair still stuck to it. They find an arm, and they find half of a leg. So they find human remains in the wall.
But not the full skeleton.
No, not the full skeleton. This particular incident was never reported to authorities. I don't know why you would find human remains in a wall
and not report it
to anybody. You just leave it there. So a lot of people speculate.
So they just put it back in the hole?
They just put it back in the hole. They just left it in the hole. It's fine. It's part of the house. We'll just leave it here. Came of the house. It's kind of like when you go out to a restaurant and you find, like, a bug in your food. Well, it's free protein. You don't need to complain.
We just had that experience the other night with an ant.
Nice. A lot of people speculate that the issues that they're having in the house are directly related to the fact that there are human remains in the wall. And it makes total sense to me that if there are human remains left on your property and you find them and you do nothing with them, that maybe whatever spirit is connected to that is going to get pissed off with you because you had the opportunity to help them and you didn't.
I would agree.
So yeah, they just leave it there. They had the opportunity to lay the spirit to rest, and they decided not to do that. So then, of course, you know, things take a turn for the worse. Arnold begins staying up late at night to play the organ. Arnold knows how to play the organ. He plays the organ quite well, but apparently the melodies that he's playing don't make any sense. They don't logically follow. And they get more sinister, and they just get louder and more ridiculous as the night grows on. He claims that there are demons in his head that are telling him that he has to play. So this is kind of where I start to get the Amityville Horror feel, because, you know, the guy wakes up at the same time every night, and, you know, whatever, and it's just,
it gets creepier and creepier,
and then all of a sudden the walls are bleeding, and you're like, oh, yeah. So yeah, he claims that there are demons causing him to play. He would often just crash on the keys, you know, just slamming his hands down on the keys. And all the while, Ginger is huddled in a bedroom with her children terrified, because why wouldn't you be?
Right.
You know, the fucking Phantom of the Opera is in your living room, you know, having a concert, so I would probably hide too.
Favorite musical?
Oh, best. Oh, one of the best. After this has happened, you know, however many times. They don't speculate how often it happens, but they say it starts. And then it stops with Arnold having a complete mental breakdown and his wife Ginger attempting suicide. They decide that the right thing to do is for Arnold to go and get treatment. And then they say that, you know, Ginger and the children are going to move to Granton, Wisconsin, to live with Ginger's parents. And then shortly thereafter, because there's no improvement in Arnold's situation, he's not gaining anything from the therapy that he's undergoing, they wind up getting divorced, and then Ginger remarries. Shortly after this, Ginger's father announces that he's going to buy Summerwind. They say, and when I say they, I mean the person that documented all of this information that is not me, they say that the reason why he was so apt to buy the property was he didn't know what was going on there. Because his daughter never said anything, and his son-in-law never said anything, so it was just, you know, whatever, it's just an abandoned house.
They never told him what's going on or why they left the house?
Apparently they never discussed it.
So he didn't think anything was on it, so it might be a good summer house for him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, because apparently this is the, you know, the family that doesn't talk to one another and explain, you know, this is really creepy, this happened to me. oh, by the way, we found a dead person in the wall that's still there, theoretically. So yeah, Ginger's father says he's going to buy Summerwind. His name is Raymond Bober, and he is a popcorn vendor slash businessman. He's an entrepreneur. Like I said, Ginger has never told her family exactly what happened and refuses to do so now. I don't know why this is a thing, but she's like, nope. But she does beg her father to reconsider buying it.
Okay.
So she tries to convince him not to buy it, but she doesn't tell him why. So, of course, he's undeterred.
And he buys it
anyway. He says that he knows that the place is haunted, but he also says that he knows the identity of the ghost.
Now, how would he?
Well, apparently, Mr. Bober has, like, dreams about the ghost at Summerwind.
Okay.
So he's having, like, premonitions.
Well, is he having premonitions since she moved home, or before she...
I don't know, you're asking me too many.
Sorry.
It just doesn't say.
Not a complete story.
I know it's not a complete story, but that's not my fault. This is the telephone game that we're playing here. So I'm close to the end of the telephone game. So Bober says that the ghost is of Jonathan Carver, who is an 18th century British explorer searching for a deed given to him by the Sioux Indians. And the document gives him the right to the northern third of Wisconsin.
Okay.
The deed is supposedly sealed in the foundation of Summerwind. Bober claims that Carver asked him to help him find it, and then Bober starts to go into these trances and use the Ouija board to try to communicate with Carver to get additional information as to where the deed might be.
Okay.
Shortly after they buy the house, Bober publishes a book under the pen name Wolfgang von Bober. So, whatever. Okay, Mr. Bober. Mr. Wolfgang von Bober. And he entitles it The Carver Effect. So, apparently, this is a very rare and very hard to find book. Probably because they published 5 copies and again to his family.
Okay.
And that was it. Maybe not. I don't know. But.
Did you try Googling it?
Something tells me. I did try and I didn't come up with anything. So, I don't know. But it sounds like it would probably be a pretty hilarious read.
Yeah.
Judging by what this popcorn vendor is saying. So once Bober buys the house, they wander through it, and Bober's brought his son, Carl, and Ginger's with them, and her husband, George, her new husband, George, has come with them. George spots the closet as they're leaving the second floor, and he begins to pull out the drawers.
Okay.
Ginger has never told him about the body. Ginger has never told anybody anything. She's been very vague about it. Now, later on, they did sit down, and she told them everything that had happened at Summerwind, but at this point, he has no idea. Once George hears the story, he's even more apt to go in the closet and rip out the drawers and figure out what's in there. He is in the closet, he's up to his shoulders, he's inspecting the space in the wall, and he gets a flashlight, and he sees nothing. So there's nothing there, there's no remains, there's nothing, it's just an open space in the wall. So, at the end of the summer, Carl, that's Bober's son, travels to Summerwind alone because he wants to get estimates on some work that needs to be done there. He wants to get some cleaning done. He wants to, you know, shape the place up because it's been abandoned for a while. When he arrives, it begins to rain really heavily. He's opened up all of the windows to try to air the place out, so he has to go around and he has to close all the windows. And when he's in an upstairs hallway, he hears a voice calling to him. He's looking around. He doesn't see anyone, so he just assumes that he's, you know, just hearing things. And it's an old house. It's entirely possible that that's what it was. He heads down the stairs, and then he hears shots in the kitchen. He goes in there, you know, he runs in there, and there's smoke in the air, and there's the smell of gunpowder. And then he searches the house, and he finds everything, you know, locked up. Everything is locked up tight. So he heads back to the kitchen, and he's looking around, and he finds the two bullet holes in the basement door that are left over from Lamont. So he examines them, but he realizes that the bullet holes are not new. They're smooth, you know, they're worn smooth around the edges from people opening and closing the door. You know, they're not brand new holes. So yeah, they're left behind from Lamont's encounter with the ghost. And it makes you wonder if there are events replaying themselves mm-hmm. at Summerwind. It seems like it's entirely possible at this point mm-hmm. that it's like a broken record and it's just going to keep playing over and over and over again. Carl, probably wisely enough, left Summerwind that afternoon. And I don't think it doesn't say he returned.
Did they
sell
the house then?
No.
Still
no.
Jumping ahead again.
Yes, you're jumping ahead again. Okay, so Bober plans to turn Summerwind into a restaurant and an inn, but this didn't go smoothly because the workmen are constantly leaving, they don't want to work there, they make excuses, their tools are disappearing, and they're paranoid, they're feeling as if somebody's watching them constantly, something otherworldly. Bober's wife, Marie, agrees with this evaluation that there's something weird going on there. Because she always feels uneasy, as if she's being watched or followed. There's also the shrinkage and expansion of the house. It said that Bober would go in and measure a room, and the room would always be larger than the estimations on the plans for the house. And sometimes it would be, like, feet. Like, 20 feet difference.
So every time he'd go in and measure, it would be different.
It would be a different number. That's what they say. He'd measure again. So what is it they say? You have to measure twice and cut once.
Uh-huh.
So he was just fucked.
Right.
From the beginning. So he had the wasted lumber. Yeah. See, the measurements were higher than the blueprints. Da-da-da. So they estimated that they could fit 150 people in the restaurant. And then when they measured that space, they found out that they could only fit half that many.
Oh.
The rooms are not only changing, getting bigger, but they're also shrinking. So very interesting.
So if something doesn't want them, they get arrested.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so even photos that Bober took of mm-hmm. the spaces, they showed enlargement or shrinkage.
Hmm.
So if you looked at it, you could tell that this was a bigger space or this was a smaller space. And now it's either bigger or smaller than it was.
Oh, wow.
Ginger had taken the curtains down after she and Arnold had moved out, but when Bober took pictures of the rooms, the curtains appeared in the photos. After this point, probably wisely enough, the project was abandoned, and Bober never saw the dream of converting the space. Then it says that Bober actually never spent a night in the house. They slept in an RV on the grounds. Yes, Carver is beginning to manifest himself malevolently. So, you know, he's attacking people when they come in the house, and Bober just doesn't feel safe going in the house. Apparently it's not cool for Bober to live in the house with JC. He's not having it. Bober explains that JC resented anyone living in the house or trying to renovate it, which is why he reacted negatively to people being in his house. Bober spent hours and days searching the basement and chipping away at the foundation to peer into the crevices, because he's constantly trying to find this deed.
Right.
And the deed actually has never been found, and the people that poured the foundation for Summerwind have explicitly stated that there is no deed in the foundation.
Okay.
Because they poured the foundation, and they didn't put anything in there. So that's just it's not a thing. But yeah, so the deed, I mean, you know, to this day, the deed has never been found.
Well, see, though, that's where I would get one of those sonic things and go around the property and see if there isn't another foundation thing.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, you know, even if Bober had found the deed, it would have been worthless. You know,
right,
I mean,
it wouldn't have...
Well, and, you know, honestly, I mean, I can't imagine that a spirit cares about document validity, you know, and is like, oh. Another point that I think is important to make, is the fact that the Sioux Indians that Carver supposedly got the deed from, they're not a single tribe of people. They were, you know, an entire nation of people, so they were many different tribes. And the British government actually ruled against individual purchase of Indian land. And also, the Sioux never claimed land west of the Mississippi.
Okay.
So, and there's a lot of stuff to kind of knock
that
back.
Well, I know the Chippewa are big around here.
Mm-hmm. People would argue that, you know, the British government, you know, did rule against individual purchase of Indian land, but the land was given to Carver.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't buy it. And then they say that because white settlers pushed the tribe further west, it's possible that the Sioux abandoned the land
mm-hmm.
and deeded it to Carver. Bober, Mr. Popcorn Vendor, spent less than 2 summers at the property. He attempted to procure a concession license before he abandoned Summerwind because he wanted to turn it into an attraction.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to sell popcorn and hot dogs and stuff and then be like, come and see the haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
But his request was ultimately denied. So he was never allowed to do that.
Any reason it was denied?
I think it was denied because people who live close to that property
okay.
are so pissed off with just random people wandering in there
mm-hmm.
to look at it.
Yeah.
That they're like, no, we don't want him to do that. Because then there's going to be even more people with like buses of people showing up to traipse over our flower beds and whatever.
Well, we're bringing money to the town.
Well, that's true. Apparently that's not an issue. I don't know.
Not yet.
So yeah, I mean, the question that I had is whether or not Summerwind was actually haunted at all, because the structure did actually burn down. So the only thing that's left is the foundation and the chimney, or a couple of chimneys? A couple of chimneys. So you can still go and see it, but it's, I mean, the mansion is gone. It's just the foundation.
I think we should go.
Yeah, we totally should go. Another road trip!
Yay!
Yep.
I love road trips.
So, in the 1980s, the house was abandoned completely. It fell deeper into ruin. Nature basically took it back. So, in 1986, the house is purchased from the Bobers by investors.
Okay.
They thought that they would rebuild, but that was not going to happen because, of course, you know, the place is freaking haunted and whatever. So the ghost was like, nope, and lightning struck it, and it burned to the ground.
Okay.
So they just never rebuilt it, and they were like, yeah, peace out.
Definitely road trip.
Yeah, total road trip.
Interesting.
So yeah, that's Summerwind. I gotta say, I learned a lot about this property, even though it was a terrible article.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I'm not originally from Wisconsin, I'm from Canada, so... yeah, learning about Wisconsin history and haunted places. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So what do you have?
So I decided to kind of look into the Mary Lou story. And that's a story about this farm that's up in Germantown.
Okay.
And we live very close to Germantown, where I met them. And my boys, let's see, my oldest was about 16. So my youngest was about 11 or 12. And they have the same set of friends for years.
Okay.
And they decided, one of their friends told them a story about the Mary Lou house that Mary Lou went in Germantown. And so they went there and they came home and they're like, Mom, we just went to a haunted house. We just went to a haunted house. I'm like, what are you talking about? So they proceeded to tell me the story. And this is their version, that during the Civil War times, this farmer had a daughter and they turned their house into a hospital for Civil War veterans who were ill, you know, injured and
right.
And the daughter fell in love with one of the soldiers she was tending to. And the soldier asked her to marry him, and they were all set to get married, and he went home to get his mother, who was an Illinois soldier, and the day of the wedding came and he didn't show up. And she was in her wedding dress waiting for him. And then the way that my kids told me was that she just waited forever and she died and lived off the rest of her life, very long and never married. So I tried to look into the story And I found a few details about people who lived after the original owners.
Okay.
And I couldn't find the actual story about the Civil War.
Okay.
But I saw a tiny YouTube video where it was a very similar story. The house was in the hospital and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
So what the later stories are, and I only have part of it because my printer didn't work. So the story is John and Mary Booth had three children. Herman, who died at age 70 in 1917, Carl, who died at age 74 in 1923, and Mary, the only daughter and the farm's namesake, who died at age 76 in 1926. Well, this was way later in the Civil War.
Right.
And it says here that none of the children ever married. They say that there's a cemetery that's still on the property. That was somehow annexed to Germantown, but it's surrounded by private property, so you can't even go on it.
Yeah.
But people have tried. And I guess the police are called out quite often to get trespassers out of there.
Yeah.
But there's a story about a guy named Walton who owned the house, and well, I can't find the date right now, but I think it was in the late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
And he was having a New Year's Eve party. And during the party, there were two ghosts that were seen, one inside the house and one outside the house. And the one outside the house was crying and not happy, and she was all in white and kind of floating around. And the one in the house, was in a window. Okay. So
the one that was floating around was full bodied.
Full bodied apparition. The feet, I think.
Okay.
I think they did. The feet were blurry and the head.
Did they say whether it was they thought it was an intelligent haunting or whether it was like that broken record, like with Summerlin? Like does it ever interact with anybody or?
Well, later on it does.
Oh, okay.
With some kids in the car, but I'll get there.
Okay.
Just like me.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So,
skipping ahead.
All right. So Tom had a visitor in his house. Tom Walton.
Okay.
And the visitor said that he saw a young girl in the yard vanish into the early morning mist. She just kind of floated and vanished.
Oh.
And then another neighbor, actually Tom said that he heard violin music in the house when he was alone in the house one day, and there was no radio playing. And the son of John and Mary Burke, his name is Herman, he played the violin.
Oh.
But there's no other mention anywhere about another male spirit in here. They were having the kitchen remodeled when the Waltons had it, and the plumber was there. And he said he could hear footprints walking across the upstairs floor when nobody else had been in the house except for the plumber.
Huh.
So Tom was, you know, wondering why all these things were happening. So he reached out to Mary Leader, who is an author and expert in the supernatural.
Okay.
I've never heard of her before.
I've never heard of her either.
So she came...
We're going to have to take their word for it that she's an expert, because I have no idea.
Yeah, she came with a Ouija board.
Oh.
And she said that there's two ghosts that are haunting the house. One is a mother and one is a daughter.
Okay.
And the daughter, she said, was an evil ghost who lurks outside the home.
Oh.
And she's searching for her missing lover, which kind of goes with the story of the guy who came back, but her dates don't really mix. So then the mother is inside the house protecting the inhabitants who are in the house from the daughter who's on the outside.
Okay.
And she had no idea about a male ghost or why the violin. So then, in asking some of the neighbors about it, they don't believe that there's really two black girls haunting it, apparently. That a longtime resident said, just wasn't the type who would come around and haunt the farm. Sure, she was an old maid and probably a little eccentric, but she had a good heart. I guess Mary, the daughter, who he's talking about, actually cared for mentally disabled people in the area. But she didn't die on the property. She died actually in Milwaukee. And then this is where my printer cut out when it printed out the rest. But then there's a story later on in 2000 where some kids were running around and they had heard the stories and they were in their car and they went to the property. And the girl was there was one girl and three other boys. And the girl was afraid to get out of her car, so she stayed in the car. And then the boys went out on the property and they were a little afraid of the police coming, but they still went out towards the house. And while they were out towards the house, she said a car drove up and had the light facing her. And she got really scared and was thinking about running out of the car, running away. But she stayed in the car and locked the door and was afraid. And then she heard the boy screaming and started running back. And the car facing her, the other car, kind of kept slowly going towards her. And then the boys came screaming. She's like, what, what? They're like, unlock the car, unlock the car. And the other car, the second car, I guess, just vanished. But the kids came running out, and they're like, let us in, let us in. So she opens up the car doors. They get in, they turn around, they turn on the car. They start to leave, and this white figure comes floating at them with this evil face, and they freak out and drive away. So, I don't know.
Okay.
And they said, I guess, if the girl tells the story, the boys saw a white floating figure that kept coming closer to them. So they freaked out, didn't even make it to the house, and came in the car. So, anyway, so after hearing the story, I'm like, okay, boys, you gotta take it there.
Right.
So we go, and because it was trespassing, I didn't want to go on the property, so we just kind of parked in front. And we didn't see anything, but the weird thing, because it was early October, it was like the first or second week in October, it wasn't Halloween yet, but it was a very warm night, and it was very quiet. I mean, there wasn't any noise. That I thought was really strange. But, you know.
Is it like close to anything? Like roadways?
It's not super far back from Mary Booth Lane. But it is set back and it's overgrown with trees and bushes and stuff. So it's not easy to see the house, but in winter you can kind of see the house. But I couldn't see the cemetery, which is what I'm most interested in. I think old cemeteries are cool. So I think I would risk trampling over to the cemetery to look in there. so I don't know. You know what's real and not, but I just like
because
it's in my neck of the woods.
Yeah. And I love that my boys were scared. So they didn't say that they saw anything. They were just like, "Hey, we're here. It was so weird."
But we
didn't see anything. So, in your research, did you come across anything about whether or not the use of the Ouija board caused any additional activity or
no? Anything about the Ouija board. There was very little written about it, so I was kind of disappointed, but in that one YouTube blurb I found, there was just a little something about it being a hospital during the Civil War, and then that was it, but the dates of when they're talking about the Mary Booth children and the Civil War don't quite match up, so I don't know, but there was a song, now I can't remember the name of the band, but there's a band, a Milwaukee band, that made like a record having to do with Mary Booth House.
Oh, okay.
We which was actually quite beautiful, the eerie music. It starts out really soft and beautiful, and then it got kind of sinister.
I don't know, but I didn't find much written about it, and I was really disappointed, so I don't know if there's other, I just googled, but I didn't find, I was disappointed, so maybe you have other ideas of me to research, and I'd be bummed. I don't want to trust cats, I'm not finding a way to get to the cemetery and reading the dates. I mean, I would personally, you know, take a stroll in the cemetery and see
if the names of the people who resided in the house match up with the names on the stones,
and do a little bit of research there. But so, do you think that the location is haunted?
I think it's very possible because there's a lot of old structures in the general area.
Yeah, because they say that, you know, spirits translate into energy, and the energy of a place can last a long time.
And the quietness was so odd. And that's the one thing that really sticks out to my mind.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, why would it be that quiet?
Yeah. Like no birds.
Nothing.
No.
It was quiet, even though the trees were still.
Oh, no rustling. Wow.
Yeah. And like in our house, which is in my farm, we have lots of bats.
Oh, yeah.
So there should be lots of bats out there, lots of owls. And we have lots of owls in our here. But it was nothing. So it makes me think, well, maybe something is up with that property, but maybe it might not be a whole lot of stuff, but I love the story.
Yeah, that's, it's really interesting that you say that they, you know, they didn't mention the Ouija board after that, because there's something about when somebody brings a Ouija board into it, it's like, then shit starts popping off.
Yeah.
You know, you start to see more activity, like the minute, you know, in the case of Summerwind, that Bober pulled out the Ouija board and tried to contact Carver.
Right.
That was when he became more malevolent and was like, I don't even want you sleeping in my house. You know, so, yeah, that's really interesting to me that it just never...
I don't know how you feel about Ouija boards, but when I was a kid, I had Ouija boards.
Oh, I have one, too.
And I used to love my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And
they moved the little planchette on purpose.
And, you know...
Like a bunch of bastards.
Yeah, and then I did it by myself a few times in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very lonely as a kid for a while.
Oh.
And I was like, is anybody there? Do you need a friend? I can remember sitting there and nothing. And I was like, well, this is stupid. And I quit.
Oh.
And I never pulled it up, but there's also a part of me that kind of is scared of using a Ouija board because I think if you are in the right place and you really channel your mental energy into it, if you're in the right place, you might actually get something.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's kind of scary only because you get a story of the demons coming through.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I necessarily believe in demons, but I do, like you said, believe in some sort of spiritual
paranormal. Yeah. Lots of questions.
Lots of questions.
So, do you think that Summerwind is haunted?
I think I want to find out. I want a road trip. I want to go see.
You want to go there and camp out and...
Yes.
Roast marshmallows with JC and...
I think there's quite a few unanswered questions.
Yeah.
But I think it's a fascinating story, and I think there could be something there. I'd like to know more about the husband who went to the mental asylum and did he ever get out?
Yeah.
What did he do after?
Right.
What are his stories? What were his thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, from the article that I found about it, I found several articles that discussed what happened there. They were all pretty similar. Some of them included them finding the remains in the closet, some of them didn't. Which I think, I mean, that really is the essence of the story, is them finding those remains. Who was it? Yeah, and why in the hell would you be like, okay, so I'm just going to leave this dead person in the wall. I mean, I would probably call the police and... You know, get the dead person out of the wall.
Yeah, you want to try and figure out who they are and how to put them in the rest.
Well, yeah, and you know, I mean, isn't that kind of gross to have a dead person in your wall? Like, that was one of the kids' bedrooms. Ugh, I don't know.
Right. Well, if I was a kid, I don't know if I'd want to sleep there anymore.
Well, that was probably Mary's room.
And I certainly wouldn't send my little girl in there.
Yeah, that was probably Mary's room anyway. And from what we've heard, you know, Mary don't care, Mary don't give a shit, so she'll just, yeah.
Yeah, and how was she after that? Did she ever have an experience? I mean, there's lots of questions.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of questions that go unanswered with Summerwind, that's for sure. And, you know, it makes you wonder if the people that live there now still, you know, hear things or see things or,
right.
You know, what is their story? Right. So it's definitely multifaceted. Would be very interesting to check out some additional information. And absolutely go on a road trip.
Definitely.
Yep.
And maybe what we could do is take a weekend and, you know, see what else is around there that's not considered haunted.
Oh, yeah. You know, go to a local watering hole and hobnob with the locals and figure out if there's anything else there.
Talking to locals would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
This is so interesting.
Yeah, it's. I think it's going to be great, and I think it's only going to get greater. So, yeah, thank you guys for listening to us and putting up with us for this long. And if you like us, you know, please subscribe. Please follow the blog. If you'd like to reach out to us and share your stories of hauntings and haunted history and, you know, what have you, stuff that you find interesting, you can send that to us at hauntheadscast@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at hauntheadscast, or you can find us on Facebook at hauntheadspodcast. So, yeah, thank you very much, Mimi, for hanging out with me today.
Yeah, peace out.
All right, guys, thanks so much, and you guys have a great day.